The History of Literature podcast is a member of the Podglomerate Network and LitHub Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
In this one, your grandfather says, "I'm certain that if the child, Matilda, has your hair and eyes as you describe, she will grow up to be a great beauty."
I'm not sure that was true, but people did say I had a very good complexion.
Did the letters distress you, Miss Matty?
It's not the letters, but the memories that grieve me. Suddenly they rise up when I thought them fastened down. Here is a letter from Peter that he wrote at school. It does not matter that I can barely see to read it, or that one day it will be dust. I've been through it so many times. Mother dear, I've been beaten again, and I've seen a ghost. Please send some cake with some citron in.
Was he sent far from home?
Shrewsbury. But things did not work out as they ought. So Father decided to tutor him at home, to keep him out of mischief. Because he really did have a dreadful habit of... He had a habit of hoaxing.
Boys misbehave.
Peter was more than a boy, and less than sensible. That's when things began to come undone. Might we blow out the candles, Mary dear? I think I might talk better in the dark.
That was the always excellent Dame Judi Dench in a clip from an adaptation of Cranford, the great novel by Elizabeth Gaskell, also known as Mrs. Gaskell, a writer from the Victorian era. We're going to be talking today about the kinds of books that young women in the World War I era might have encountered. That's right. We're joined again by author Radha Vatsal, a historian and the author of the Kitty Weeks mystery series. Book 2 in the series has just come out. We'll talk about that. And we'll talk about why Mrs. Gaskell in particular would be so perfect for Kitty. This is fun watching Kitty Weeks, the character, grow and having access to her creator in real time. And listeners, here's a couple of beach recommendations for you, or the airport, or wherever you find yourself this summer. There's Mrs. Gaskell, her books Cranford, Wives and Daughters, North and South, all of them excellent. Also, the miniseries. You heard Judi Dench there. Cranford, you could seek that out. I think you'll want to know the story that she's about to tell when she blows out the candle. And the recommendation, Murder Between the Lines. I blazed through the novel while I was at an airport, and I loved every page. Radha really has this down. The pace is wonderful. The protagonist is even more wonderful, and the history is compelling and serves the story. If you like intrepid young female journalists, or if you'd like to know more about the period in the 19-teens in New York City, or both, then this is the book for you. Okay, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jack Wilson. What else do we have going on? We're still ad-free and still going strong. Nothing can stop the podcast, except vacation, which is coming up. I'm off to Seattle for some R&R, and neither of those stands for rain. Those R's are reading and more reading. There is no rest for the weary or relaxation. So here's the vacation schedule. This is the 99th episode. Number 100 should be up without a delay. I don't want to make you wait for that one. There may be a short delay before number 101. But number 100 is a good one. You could listen to that one twice. Mike Palindrome stopped by for that one. We haven't had Mike on for a while, have we? Oh, we did. Feuds. That's right. We had great literary duels. Getting some good feedback on that one. So, find us on Facebook, entertain us with your emails. Here we go. Let's do some alliterations. Find us on Facebook. Entertain us with your emails. Intercept us on iTunes. Sidle up on Stitcher. Grab us from Google Play. What other can we get going here? Visit us on the web. Visit us. All right. Another dream dies. Radha Vatsal with a Kitty Weeks reading list today on the history of literature. Hey, grown-ups. The Cat in the Hat cast is a new podcast from Wondery, perfect for the whole family. Join the Cat in the Hat and your favorite Dr. Seuss characters as they get whisked away on a new adventure every week. Fish dreams of creating his very own polite and quiet podcast. That is, until he gets a surprise visit to his Fishbowl podcast studio from the Cat in the Hat himself, and it becomes very clear that the cat has other plans for the podcast, and those plans are the opposite of quiet. The cat may be disruptive, but it turns out he's also a great help to get Fish out of all kinds of predicaments. Bursting with music, silliness, and rhymes, the Cat in the Hat cast encourages us all to find fun that is funny in every episode. Sing along to new favorite songs, try your luck at Titanic tongue twisters, have some fun with wondrous wordplay, and most importantly, bring your family along for all of the adventures in the Cat in the Hat cast. Follow the Cat in the Hat cast on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the Cat in the Hat cast ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Wondery Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts. Okay, joining me now for a repeat appearance on our show is Radha Vatsal, expert in early 20th century film and journalism, and the author of the Kitty Weeks mystery series. The last time Radha was here, her first book, A Front Page Affair, was about to come out, and now she's published the second book in the series, Murder Between the Lines, and we're going to ask her some questions about her writing process, her experience on the book tour. And because this is the history of literature, I'm going to ask about the books that her intrepid heroine, a single young woman living in New York on the eve of World War I, might be most likely to have read. Radha Vatsal, welcome back to the History of Literature podcast.
Thank you for having me back. I really enjoyed our last conversation.
Oh, so did I, and so did the listeners. We got a lot of positive feedback, so I'm glad you're here again, and I know that you've been busy, and I want to start by complimenting the new book, Murder Between the Lines, which I started reading while I was waiting for a flight, and I kept reading it during the flight, and I don't think I looked up more than a handful of times until I was finished. It was very enjoyable.
Thank you. As I was saying when we were speaking earlier, it's always good to hear, because you never know whether a book works until someone reads it and tells you. So.
Yeah. My guess is you'll need about 10 years, and then someday you'll pick it up and start reading it again, and you'll read it like a real reader will, and you'll probably be very impressed with how it flows.
I'm glad to hear that.
So how has the response to Kitty been?
I think it's been great. I mean, I think people really like her a lot as a character, and they also really, the book takes place 1915, 1916. She works at a newspaper, at the ladies' page of a newspaper, because women weren't allowed to report real news at the time, so they were always relegated to these women's departments in the papers. And I think people really like the combination of office politics 100 years ago and these discussions on, you know, feminism and stuff and what women can do and can't do. And so much of the feedback I get, says how sort of familiar it feels to women now.
Right.
That those struggles that took place for Kitty before women had the right to vote, which they got in 1920, a lot of those struggles, you know, we're still seeing. And I guess I was just reading in the papers today about women being interrupted while they were speaking and stuff. So,
right. Yeah, with Kamala Harris.
That's right.
It's been in the news.
And I think a director of Uber as well. So complaining about that.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, it's the book is, it's not anachronistic. I mean, it's not as if I felt like today's conflicts were thrown back into the turn of the century. It feels very real and historically accurate for where she is and what she's going. But one of the things I like about it is a lot of the conflict is sort of internal for her. It's like she's internalized all of the things that women can and can't do. And she doesn't just assume that it's her place to break down doors. But sometimes, you know, she knows she has to press, but she knows she also has to be a daughter and a friend and an employee, and she kind of can empathize with the people who are maybe stuck in their ways of thinking for good reason.
Yeah, I think that was very important for me to create a heroine who wasn't completely modern. It bothers me a lot in novels where I read where I feel like the main character's views are remarkably similar to what our views are now. And for me, part of the fun was writing that kind of struggle that she might have. And in Murder Between the Lines, for instance, it's based around the death of a young boarding school student who's found sort of frozen in the snow, and she's known to be a sleepwalker, and the papers report that, you know, her sleepwalking was brought about because she studied too much, and this kind
right.
of like depleted her nervous system and caused her to, you know, do things like sleepwalk. And that's actually based on a newspaper article almost verbatim, except for in the newspaper article, that was the end of the story. There was no suggestion that any foul play had occurred, and I, you know, took the liberty of making it into a mystery. But as I was researching the book, too, I saw that, you know, many suicide accounts of young women who'd committed suicide, all of this were often put down to if the girl went to college or school, that, you know, she studied too much, she worked too hard, like women's brains can't handle that kind of pressure, and it leads to all kinds of physical and emotional stresses.
Right. And Kitty's response is not just to say, well, that's superstitious, that's ridiculous, women are as capable as men, but to wonder about it a little bit and to say, well, is there anything to that science? And to be a little anxious because she herself likes to read and study, and she explores the idea rather than just dismisses it the way we, with, you know, a century of hindsight, might do.
Exactly. And for me, I really wanted to have that as part of it, because I feel like it would be crazy for her with just like that being so much. I mean, this is a story that was on the front page of the New York Times, girl somnambulist frozen to death, and that's what they thought was a credible reason for why this young woman might have gone out sleepwalking. So for Kitty to just dismiss it out of hand made no sense to me. So she does look into it. She goes to see a nerve specialist who talks to her about some of the medical knowledge that was out at the moment and at that time. And one of the books, I don't mind, I'm going to jump ahead if you don't mind and just mention
fine.
It is called Sex and Education by Edward Clark, and he was a Harvard guy who argued, and it was a well-received book that, for instance, it's all right for women to study and work hard. It's just that time in their life when they do it, they're transitioning into maturity. It's not a good time. You know, this leads to all kinds of physical problems in terms of, you know, menstruation and all this kind of stuff. And they can never kind of mature properly if they sort of drain too much of their energy to their brains, essentially.
Right.
And when Kitty hears all this, she also wonders, as you said, you know, well, is she working too much? Is she studying, you know, reading too much? And she takes it to heart, but she also questions it. And for me, that's part of what makes writing in a particular historical moment so interesting, is that the history is not just the backdrop, but you want to have it filter into how the characters think, and presumably the explanations that they would have given for a murder or for some event would have been different than the explanations we give today. And 100 years later, people may come and think that the explanations we've offered for things that have happened sound pretty crazy and superstitious.
Right. So, you know, it's funny that I started with the question, how has the response to Kitty been, rather than how has the response to the book been. But it just seems like the right question. She's so lifelike and likable, and I think it's because of the way you've done this, where she's wrestling with the history in such an interesting way, and such a we're so close to Kitty, and I felt like it was sort of her book as much as yours. I almost felt like if someone had told me that they for some reason they told me they didn't really like the book, I'd be offended on Kitty's behalf, because I'd say, well, how could you not like Kitty? I don't know if that's what you were going for. Yeah.
Well, I don't think I was going for that sort of consciously, but I like her. I'm interested in her struggles too. So I'm glad that that's just great to hear.
Yeah. Now I know this is a series, and I'm glad to hear you say that you like her. I could imagine an author launching into a series and then after several books tiring of the main character, or feeling like they had kind of said all there was to say or done all there was to do. But it sounds like you would still be able to see your way forward.
Yeah. I mean, it's an incredibly rich period. And mm-hmm. I feel like I've mentioned this before, but there's really not so much that's been written in this moment, which is sort of during the World War One era, even though the U.S. hasn't yet, the time these novels are set, the U.S. hasn't yet sent its troops abroad. But there's so much going on, so much changing, both for women politically, but for the country as a whole, culturally. And it's really transitioning from sort of being this Victorian and second-tier country to being a global superpower. And it all happens very, very fast, almost, in like these 5-6 years. And so I think partly because it's kind of a complicated and not an easy period, that there isn't, I feel, so much popular fiction set during this time. Mm. It all sort of comes before, where you have, you know, the robber barons. You have the turn of the century, so you have the robber barons and, you know, the Astors, the Vanderbilts, all that gilded era, New York, or then you jump straight to the 20s and the jazz age. But how did we go from one to the other?
Yeah.
So quickly, you know, I feel like that's really something that hasn't been explored.
Right. Well, that is going to, that's a nice transition into what I was planning to talk to you about, which is the books that she would have encountered. Because as I was going through and I was putting together my own mental list of, oh, I wonder if she would have read this author or that author, I was struck by how many of them had not been writing when she was around, you know, during these years. I kept thinking of, you know, Ernest Hemingway and F. Scott Fitzgerald. And of course, they were all really late teens or really in the 20s when it would have hit her radar.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for at least fans of literature, that period is almost like the beginning of the 20th century in a way. And the authors that we maybe will be talking about, the Henry Jameses or Edith Whartons, almost feel like the end of the 19th century.
I think that's right. You know, I feel like, and I think that's what makes that era so interesting, because it's transitional between
it's like
the 19th.
Yeah.
And so I think I mentioned briefly in the novel that, you know, there's something in the paper about Henry James being sick. So obviously Henry James was well known and established. And I imagine that Kitty, she's 19, so I imagine that she would have read something by him. But I still see her more reading the Victorians and then reading in terms of what she's kind of currently reading. She reads the newspaper a lot. She watches movies. I feel like she is more looking at popular culture. Like, so she, you know, she reads magazines and a lot of the Ladies' Home Journal, Vogue, and there were in circulation at the time. Also, there were early movie magazines, which she would, I imagine, her looking at. So I see her more sort of consuming popular culture.
Right, because she is intensely curious, and she has this interest to sort of write profiles and that kind of journalism.
Yeah, and I think also that I really do think that the world was changing so rapidly. And it's funny because, you know, I started writing this series way before this election. But now that sort of things have settled in, I do feel like the moment that we're living in now is actually very similar to the moment that she was living in the sense that every day something crazy was happening,
yeah.
You know, something where I've never personally felt so compelled to check the news, if not, you know, once, multiple times a day to see what's going on. And the same thing was happening during this moment in the teens, where every day, and part of how these novels are constructed is that every day in the novel corresponds to an actual historical day. So, you know, if she mentions that something happened on that day and it's like a public event, that thing happened on that day.
Wow.
I didn't
know that. And I would have guessed that you had just compressed, you know, months worth of historical events into a short span of time.
No, not at all. And
wow.
that was really crazy. And I was actually, when I wrote it, I was almost wondering whether I should like put the dates on each, you know, on each
right.
day or do something to flag that. But then I decided that, you know, it might get old as a writing thing. But no, and you can see it very clearly in the first one. It's 3 weeks and it starts on a particular day and it ends, and everything that happens, like, really happened. And the same thing with this, everything that happens exact. So things were just moving incredibly fast. So like, I don't see her, you know, relaxing back into fiction in the same way when the nonfiction world around her is so,
right.
is so kind of tumultuous.
Right. Right. Especially for someone working at a newspaper where the front page is gathering headline after headline. And if they're all, you know, these amazingly important stories all crowding for room on the front page, it seems like, you know, a journalist would be get kind of an adrenaline rush from that and be energized. And it would make you want to consume even more and more news just to keep up.
I would think so. And, you know, just as a writer doing the research, for me, knowing which stories to leave off when I refer
yeah.
to what's happening
right.
is almost hard. I want to refer to everything because I want to be able to say, and did you know this, like, you know, this other thing was going on. It's pretty crazy, but you can't.
Right.
But I feel like those times were really kind of sort of on adrenaline. Things were just moving very fast.
Yeah. Maybe you should ask your publisher to include some reprints of the newspapers as like a pullout insert or something in the book.
Well, I think you would almost have to just see it day by day. You know,
yeah.
if you saw the front page every day, you would just be amazed. And it was like they would say one thing, you know, oh, an agreement has been signed. Next day, it's been rescinded. The third day, that something's happened to the Kaiser. The fourth day, President Wilson. You know,
right.
it was kind of like that. And then there'd be multiple other stories going on, like
yeah.
girl somnambulist frozen to death, you know, so
right.
it's just very colorful and also important changes.
Yeah. And the people, I mean, Thomas Edison and the president. And I mean, there's just these characters that are very important to the cultural life of the country.
And what they did and the decisions that they made really changed the country
right.
in ways that we're still sort of living with. So, for instance, you see a little bit, maybe not so much in this book, but the first book, I kind of, in my mind, they're all one. But for instance, you know, this was the time when the FBI got created. There was no FBI before. So you have the Department of Justice the Treasury Department battling over whose kind of investigative teams get to take over and coordinate intelligence for the whole country. So it's the Secret Service battling against the Bureau of Investigation. It wasn't the Federal Bureau of Investigation at that time. And that's part of the backstory with President Wilson, whose son-in-law was the head of the Treasury Department. So there are a lot of parallels also
right.
to what's going on now in an interesting way.
Right. And the automobile rise. And I mean, Edison is a good example. It's easy to think of him as this inventor who's off in his mad scientist laboratory, and every once in a while he comes out with this amazing invention. But he was also a real political figure in the sense of, fighting for his company and to get the electrification.
Oh yeah, he was very much, he was very much like in. I think because he wasn't working alone, it was part of this whole team of people all mm-hmm. working in different areas that were all kind of relevant to the progress and changes that were happening at the time. And one of the issues that Murder Between the Lines takes up was that, again, this is a change that happened so rapidly, but the U.S. Army was kind of pathetic at the start of World War One. It was, I think, ranked 19 in terms of quality and training and so on. The U.S. Navy was pretty good, and people had these fears that the war in Europe would somehow spill over into the U.S. somehow, like there'd be like teams of Germans swarming the shores of New Jersey or something, and what right. was the country going to do to protect itself? And then Edison was among those who stood up, like calling for industries to kind of take the lead in producing munitions, equipment, all this stuff that the country needed to be able to have a great military fighting, force. And all of that, again, happened during this time. But the way it happens, which is so kind of crazy, and that's what the book explores, like with so many stops and starts, so many errors and consequential errors. I mean, right. I find that very interesting.
It is. And I'm glad we've been talking about it this way, because I think we're probably conveying something that I think is really important for people who are deciding whether to read the book. And sometimes historical fiction, it's probably unfairly given this rap, but sometimes you can feel going into it like, oh, well, that's going to be like taking medicine. It's a dry period. And what did they know back then? They didn't have the internet. And your book is not like that at all. I mean, it's very dynamic. It's very fast paced and exciting. And it's not just that there's a murder mystery, although that helps, but it's just the way the history is unfolding and the way that she's encountering all of the events as they unfold. It's very exciting.
Yeah, I think that it must have been very exciting to live during that time. And what I think is interesting also when you're doing historical writing is that we know how the story ends. We know in which direction certain things go,
right.
but we don't know what other directions things could have taken. So for instance, I don't want to go into sort of things that will give away the plot of this book, but I mentioned briefly, I think in the first book also, that people drove electric cars, 100 years ago. So what happened that's not yeah. part of the second book, but what happened to that? That's a path of development and technological development that didn't get taken. Why didn't it get taken? And now 100 years later, we're cycling back to that, trying to figure out how to make this technology part of our life. So I feel like sometimes the winning technology or the winning solution is not always the best solution. Mm-hmm. And I like to focus on also the things that didn't work, the things that didn't happen, and that we now, 100 years later, don't know that, oh, well, they were actually trying to do this, or maybe things didn't exactly look the way, that the path to get from point A to point B was not a straight path,
right?
I guess.
Right, and not an inevitable one.
Exactly. That's right.
Okay, so let's talk a little more about the books. We started to talk about the nonfiction, and before we move to the fiction, let's just keep going with the nonfiction books, because I felt like it's so important to the book, these nonfiction works that people are using to sort of explain women or explain other aspects of life that are important to Kitty. And that become something she really has to wrestle with. So what are the other books that you think, the nonfiction works that you think would have been important to Kitty?
So some of the others are there were all these guides. I think it was a great time for print culture, and there were a lot of self-help guides and other types of books that she might have referred to, or actually I mentioned that she refers to them. So one of them is like, there's a series called Peeps at Great Cities, and there's a New York edition, and she uses that because she's a newcomer, relatively speaking, to New York City. So she uses that to kind of get around the city, to know what's what. And I really enjoy reading these descriptions of what a guidebook to a visitor coming to New York in the teens.
So what are they like? Are they, do they have maps and pictures, or are there descriptions, or?
Well, this one doesn't have maps, but it kind of describes the feel of the place. And then it tells you, you know, the funny thing is that so much of it is the same. So I'll just sort of give you the table of contents if you don't mind. So it's like the spirit of the city. So it talks about the hustle and bustle and the city that never sleeps.
Yeah.
New Amsterdam, the history of the city, how to get to New York, two great stations, so Penn Station and Grand Central, which had been built at the time, four great streets. And if I remember correctly, that the four big streets are Wall Street, Fifth Avenue, Broadway, and Riverside Drive.
Wow.
And they are kind of like these four streets that really kind of in different ways present a different kind of portrait of the city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the city in the morning, afternoon, and night, the skyscrapers, Coney Island, shops, and theaters. So,
yeah.
I mean, so in a funny way, it's like both different as you read the description, and at the same time, it's almost very similar. Like the things that the guidebook points out are the things that I think guidebooks today would still point out.
Yeah, right. And does it give advice for young women in particular? Like, here are some areas not to go into, or here's the type of thing to avoid?
I actually didn't catch that in this book because it's a general book, but there are many books like in the first Kitty Weeks book in A Front Page Affair, she looks at a book called Journalism for Women. So those books are definitely sort of geared towards women, and they tell you what are the faults women make, you know, what are the mistakes women writers generally make. So that's definitely more, sort of centered around gender. She also reads this book called What a Young Woman Ought to Know, and that's sort of like a guide to growing up and just like getting marriage and
Now, was that written by a man?
No, it was actually written by a woman.
Okay.
And I thought I had pulled it out, but I pulled out the wrong book. I'm going to see if I can. Yep, I have it right here. But it was written by a woman, and it's kind of like a guidebook, like one of these American Girl growing up books, might be now today. It has chapters on like, what are you worth? Your body, sleep, breathing, exercise, all of these things.
Right.
And then,
yep.
But then the advice that it gives of, added injuries from tight clothing, how often to bathe, things like that, building your brain. And
part of me is, it's like I'm torn. Part of me is interested because I find it interesting that, to think about this advice being given to a young woman. And part of me, I think because I'm talking to you, I'm thinking this must be so interesting for you to encounter these things and to think that here are some details that might make their way into your narrative. And it would be really interesting for Kitty, every time she gets dressed, if she's thinking about the clothes that she's putting on because of what she's read in one of these books, or the common sentiment or the common wisdom that's out there at the time.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I wanted to try to use, and especially in the case, as we were discussing earlier, of the murder that's at the heart of this book, which is this young woman sleepwalker dying. I think that all kind of ties in together, because she would have been raised. She obviously has, given that she works at a newspaper and so on, she has some sort of more progressive outlook on the world, but she would also have gotten all these other messages about what's right to do, what's wrong to do, the effects of certain things, you know, too much exercise, too little exercise, tight clothes, not tight clothes. And all of this would play into what kind of a detective she is and how she solves these mysteries. And that's kind of what I enjoy working with.
Right. Now, before we leave the world of nonfiction, I wanted to mention that a lot of this takes place around a school that that Kitty is visiting and doing some some profiles that she's writing, but then as part of her investigation, she gets to kind of see the world of these private schools. And I'm really struck by how the philosophy of the school itself, or the head of the school, or the individual teachers, makes such a big difference for the type of education that's going to be available. I'm wondering if you could talk about that a little bit, what you found when you were doing the research on the schools.
Well, you know, actually what was interesting to me was I thought there would be much more material out there in terms of women's education, schooling, mm-hmm. and so on. And there was really not as much as I thought. There was more on college-level education, but even that, there wasn't as much as I thought there would be. And in terms of, like, what the boarding school experience would have been like, or like an elite girls' school experience would have been like, there really weren't so many general books, and I kind of pieced it together from various sources and accounts of what, because I think that there was, many of these schools were started by, you know, like, for instance, Miss Porter's, which still exists today, were started by these individual women
mm-hmm.
who started off with tiny class sizes and had a very personal kind of approach to the education of young women, and their philosophy, you know, there were no regulations of, you know, what needed to be taught or not taught. So
right.
I imagine that many of those schools were very kind of idiosyncratic, and they really operated according to their founders' philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of tried to piece it together from, like, a little accounts that I came across, but I also, right at the beginning, there is a scene where, you know, she's walking through the school and you hear the teachers talking, and I tried to find period textbooks and sort of use some of their language in the kind of instruction the girls were getting.
Right.
But it was interesting that, you know, that I couldn't find, like, for instance, some general nonfiction, even an academic overview of the subject. It was very hard for me to find.
Interesting. Well, if it was part your invention, it seemed very believable, but also just very compelling that, you know, a parent might be choosing a school, you know, because they want a school that's going to teach very traditional values, or they might want one, or they might be okay with one where it's kind of progressive and the girls are pointed toward a more professional kind of postgraduate life.
Yeah, and I think, well, I think also what's interesting is, like, the combination of the two, right? Because mm-hmm. in the school, some of the principals' views are very progressive and others are not. So she doesn't believe in corporal punishment. But then in terms of the subjects the girls are taught and how much they're taught of a certain subject also. So, for instance, the young woman who dies is interested in science. But one thing I did find out, which was very interesting, and this I think happens again and again, is when, you know, in the 18th and 19th century, when science was a little bit more ad hoc and less prestigious, there were a lot of books geared towards women in biology and, you know, for women in chemistry, and those were considered women's subjects, and the men focused more on the humanities.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, and then when science sort of became more reputable and I suppose became more scientific, then women were steered away to it, and then humanities became more of a woman's subject, and they were pushed into like home economics and these new fields that came up. And even in the sciences, they were pushed more towards biology than towards chemistry and physics. But that wasn't always the case, which was something that I found interesting. So there are all these like cycles of thought happening about what is the right thing to teach women. And I think I blended the principal's views as like a little bit of combination of some forward looking and others.
Right. Yep.
More conservative.
Okay. So let's move to the literature. So you mentioned that you thought that Kitty would probably, the fiction she would have encountered would have been more of the Victorians. Do you think that would have been required, or would she have found it just because in the world before radio and television, novels were a primary form of entertainment? Or how do you think she would have come across the novels?
Well, I imagine that her backstory is that she went to boarding school in Switzerland. And mm-hmm. I think also at the time, whether or not she had gone to boarding school in Switzerland, the U.S. at that time was looking to Europe for all its cultural cues.
Right.
So I think she would have been more likely to read, you know, British Victorian literature than, say, American literature,
right,
for starters.
So probably not Edgar Allan Poe or Mark Twain, or they probably wouldn't have been on her radar as a girl in a school in Switzerland.
No, I think as a girl with some a well-off young woman, no, I think she would have probably read more Dickens and Jane Austen, and mm-hmm. And particularly she mentions Elizabeth Gaskell.
Right. So let's talk about Elizabeth Gaskell, often called Mrs. Gaskell.
That's right. I like to call her Mrs. Gaskell.
Yeah, let's call her that. So what does, I'm sorry I interrupted. So what is Kitty finding in Mrs. Gaskell's works?
Well, the book I specifically mention her reading is Wives and Daughters. Mrs. Gaskell wrote like a bunch of different for kinds of books. There were these social issue novels,
mm-hmm.
Like North and South, which is excellent. Ruth, which I haven't read, but they really tackle some big issues. North and South, for instance, tackles the difference between, you know, Northern industrialized England and the South, the more genteel cultured kind of British society.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're sort of very bold and powerful novels. She also did, the biography of
Charlotte Bronte.
Yeah. Exactly. She did the biography of Charlotte Bronte. She wrote Cranford, which is a smaller novel, which I think people know about because it was serialized,
mm-hmm.
A masterpiece theater, but it's light and very funny. In that novel, actually, there's a guy who gets run over, I think, by a train because he's too busy reading Dickens. and Wives and Daughters, I read this late. I grew up reading Jane Austen. I mean, I started reading Jane Austen very young, and I just loved those books, as so many people do. And then, you know, George Eliot, everybody knows about George Eliot. I read Wives and Daughters, and I was amazed. Mm. I think it was, I was just kind of blown away, because I felt like it was somewhere between between Jane Austen and not sort of in the sense that it's not political. It's a story about a young girl and growing up and all this kind of stuff. And somewhere between Jane Austen, or not between, Jane Austen meets George Eliot. But I think of it as like sort of like a perfect novel of the time. And it deals with many of the things that Kitty has to deal with, because the young woman in the novel, Molly Gibson, the heroine, lives alone with her father, as Kitty does.
Mm-hmm.
But then he decides to remarry. And then the new stepmother has a stepdaughter, and the kind of just their relationship and what happens, that's that's Wives and Daughters, but Kitty has this fear, and in Murder Between the Lines, her father meets this other woman, and she has this fear that he's going to get married. And that's also an interesting thing for me to explore for a heroine living in the 1910s is she's able to do what she does because she doesn't have a mother figure in the stories.
Right.
If she suddenly happened to have a mother figure appear on the on the scene, it would probably curtail her activities and her freedom. And
in what ways?
Well, I don't think, her father, Kitty's father, doesn't ask too many questions. He allows her to go out and about by herself pretty much. I mean, she doesn't go out late and things, but she has a lot of freedom. Whereas with a mother, she would maybe have to be chaperoned. The mother would be more involved in her day-to-day life and more
concerned about, even if the mother trusted her, would be more concerned about appearances and here's how that would look if we were to allow you to do that.
Exactly. And when we spoke the last time, we were talking about these silent era action film heroines.
Right.
And one of the things that's very noteworthy about them, these were these women, the heroines of action films that were very popular during the 1910s, is that none of those characters have mother figures. There is no, and that's what kind of makes them work, I think, as characters.
Yeah.
And you look at figures like Nancy Drew, for instance, there's a reason she doesn't have a mom. And I think there's something structural about the genre that makes the appearance of a mother a very tricky thing to deal with. And then particularly, then you put it in the 1910s, it's very tricky to deal with. And so Wives and Daughters is about this young woman who has a mother sort of foisted on her when she's, I think, maybe 16 or 17. And it's very interesting.
And it's there's something about a father and a daughter when there's also not a son involved, right? Kitty doesn't have a brother.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right. So the daughter really takes on both the role of the mother in terms of being in charge of the house, but also kind of, yes, that's a really good point, occupies this place of a son in terms of the amount of freedom she has and what she's able to do.
Right.
And the kinds of, probably the kinds of conversations she has with her dad. And in the mystery series, she does bounce off ideas and he does explain things to her. So that relationship is, I think, would be a very different relationship if there was another woman in the picture. And as you mentioned, certainly if there was a boy, it would be very different.
Yeah. But he doesn't, the father is a little bit torn, right? He's sort of, he obviously respects her intelligence and he knows that she's very capable and can do things. And I think part of him is really wants to see her fulfill all of her dreams. And on the other hand, maybe because he is the sole parent, he wants to make sure that he's not screwing up whatever she needs to be in order to become a woman who can survive in the world as a woman.
Exactly. And again, I feel like that tension is really important. I mean, it drives me nuts in books or in movies where you have like a female character going down some dark, lonely alley at the middle of the night without like taking any precautions or having anyone to call.
Right.
And I'm always like, why would you do that? Why would you do that? And so I do feel like she goes out in the world. He allows her to go out in the world, but he does fight back when she does things that are stupid and potentially dangerous. And
I
wanted to keep that in. And I think if she would have had a mother figure, certain things, she would have to like outright rebel against that person to do some of the things she does. And, that would just really change the dynamic.
Right. Okay. So before we leave Mrs. Gaskell behind, I wanted to mention something that I discovered when I was doing some research on her biography of Charlotte Bronte.
Uh-huh.
And this might be something you already know, but there is a, here's an interesting paragraph that I found on the internet. I'm going to just read it out here for the listeners.
Sure.
Quote, Gaskell had to deal with some sensitive issues. This is in relationship to the biography of Charlotte Bronte. She toned down some of her material. In the case of her description of the clergy daughter's school, attended by Charlotte and her sisters, this was to avoid legal action from the Reverend Wilson, the founder of the school. The published text does not go so far as to blame him for the deaths of two Bronte sisters, but even so, the Wilson family published a rebuttal with the title, A Refutation of the Statements in the Life of Charlotte Bronte Regarding the Casterton Clergy Daughter's School. And when I read that, I thought, this makes Mrs. Gaskell sound almost like a kind of a Kitty Weeks type character, where she was really interested in a subject, and then she started writing a profile of Charlotte Bronte, but then she got tangled up in maybe a more serious investigation. And I'm wondering, did you see Mrs. Gaskell as a role model for Kitty at all?
No, I actually think of her more as a role model for, like, I don't know so much of her about her life, but, mm-hmm. but what I do know is that unlike Jane Austen or the Brontes and things, she was married, she had children, she had a full kind of domestic life, and she wrote. So when I was starting to write, I had just had my first daughter, and I was like trying to figure out. So I more thought like, oh, if Mrs. Gaskell could manage it, you know, I don't know how many kids she had and how much she had going on. So I more thought about it in that,
oh,
like, kind of, you know.
She's and, not Kitty's role model. She's yours.
She's mine. I know very little about her, but actually now that you mention it, she's one of the few who sort of, from that era, who had a, you know, she was Mrs. Gaskell. She was not a single woman, and she definitely had, you know, a lot of children, a full, you know, her hands full with, like, day-to-day stuff.
Right, right. Okay, so we're kind of bumping up against our time limits here. So I wanted to ask you a surprise bonus question.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm very ready, yep.
Okay, and I want to kind of couch this in a, I want to be respectful of the writing process. And so if this is too disruptive to your writing process and you want to refuse to answer, that's fine too.
All right, now you're making me nervous. Go ahead.
Well, I know it can be hard when you're talking about future books if you feel like you're giving anything away or anything is making you think about things in an uncomfortable way. But here's what I'm interested in. Let's say you're going to sit down and write 20 novels in the Kitty Weeks series.
Uh-huh.
Do you think you would stay in the, would you want to stay in the general time period? Would you keep things, you know, within the teens and the World War I era? Or would you like to see and follow and invent Kitty as she grows up and gets married and has children and maybe grandchildren? Would you have any interest in taking us through the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s?
I think that's a really difficult question to answer.
Yeah.
In part because each book that I write sort of gives me ideas for something else.
Mm-hmm.
And also I think that, you know, I kind of didn't realize, but the way the events around us changes also changes my ideas on what I would like to write and what I would like to be doing with my writing. So I think it's very hard to project so far into the future.
Yeah.
What I would be writing, but I kind of, yes, I think just a lot of different things influence both the kind of research that I'm doing and that gives me ideas, and then just what's going on around me. And then at a certain time, certain things seem more important than others, you know, and other times I'm like, wow, why am I writing about this? There's so much else going on in the world. Why am I, you know, writing something that's set 100 years ago. So,
well, I have to say, it seems like a lot of series, they don't move forward in time like that. They find the right combination of character and setting, and then they just keep exploring it. And, you know, it's that's certainly for my favorite books that are set in a particular era. It's certainly something that I enjoy. But part of me also thought, boy, it would be great to see New York is so amazing in all of those decades. And to think of Kitty admiring Eleanor Roosevelt, or even as an older lady admiring the young women of the 60s and kind of taking her all the way into the Mad Men era would be a really interesting idea.
Well, that would be, that's very ambitious. I have to say, quite honestly, I have not thought that far, but you
I think probably
you never know.
It would probably also be difficult for the author, and this is probably why it's not done so much. The author would have to become a historical expert over and over and over in a different time period. So it seems like it would be a lot of work.
Well, also, I think, you would have to, it's just a lot of work. And also, I think the period dictates kind of the tone and the feel of it, what's going on.
Right.
So I think like this is like this moment, as I said, like things are happening so condensed, which is how they make for a good mystery. That's how it works. I don't, you know, the 20s, I don't know how, I don't know the, I'm so sort of immersed in the feel of the teens that like the 20s seem like totally foreign to me. Forget the 50s and 60s. So.
Yeah. But the hard thing is going to be if your characters are moving forward in their own personal lives. Like I feel like her relationship is getting a little closer, and if you want to, you know, have her get married, and like time is going to pass unless you sort of put some of those things on hold.
Yeah. I mean, I think in series, you then have to either artificially do something or the other. And then I think you can really spoil, there is a certain, you know, you can really spoil part of the charm of what makes things fun in a series. And certainly even for me, like a married Kitty does not, I say this now, appeal as much as, you know, where she is right now. And that is kind of why the novels are set pretty close together in time. Though, of course, things are moving along, but there are no sort of major changes so far.
Yeah. And it's very easy to imagine 20 books or whatever number you want to choose. But, I mean, they could all just be the 20 articles that she was writing during the 2 or 3 year period where she was young and single in New York. And there's no reason to have her necessarily progress through life and get married and have children and do all of that. There would be plenty of interesting things to cover. There's always another murder, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, well, Radha Vatsal, I really enjoyed this conversation, and as I said, I enjoyed reading Murder Between the Lines, and I think everyone should run out and buy it. It's a perfect way to spend an afternoon on the beach or wherever you are this summer. We'll look forward to book number 3, and I hope you'll come back for that one as well.
Oh, I would love to, and good luck with episode 100 and keeping Mike in check.
Right, I think I will need it. There we go. Throwing a little shade at Mike Palindrome. So good. It's one of my main jobs here, keeping him in check. Oh, I had fun with that one. My thanks to Radha Vatsal for joining me. Do check out her book, Murder Between the Lines, the next time you're in a bookstore or doing some online browsing. Radha is so smart and so dedicated to getting her books correct, accurate. Seeing someone immersed in the history and creating this wonderful series as part of the deal, it's inspiring. I'm Jack Wilson. The 100th episode is next week. We have a show about numbers in honor of the 100th episode. You won't want to miss it. As always, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.